you could read. What's on my
Love
phone?
Talk Radio.
And here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Paragon Radio. I'm your host, Pogo Man. We're broadcasting live to the Twin Cities of Millennium and Paragon Cities from the Paragon Radio news satellite at a high altitude of 0.006125 feet above sea level. Think about it. But I don't do this alone. I have a co-host. Some people say he's mad. Some people say he's a Viking. And we just call him Mad. Let me try that again. We just call him Mad Viking.
We are gathered here today to pay our final respects yet again to a channel.
Barely lasted 1 year.
Not even.
I said barely. I know, yeah. Not even. For those who don't know, it was announced this morning. For those
well,
who were hoping...
Actually, the announcement came yesterday, and a whole lot of people
on a
found out they lost their jobs on a Sunday.
Yes. That's even worse. We're talking about the... channel known as G4 TV. Yes, the second iteration barely lasted a year. And I thought about this from the beginning, and I think they really, really should have had a Kickstarter. Because here's what I thought the problem was. I never knew when the shows were on. I didn't even know when it started. And it turns out somebody goes to me, oh, they've been on for 3 months. I'm like, what?
Yeah, all on YouTube and Twitch.
Yeah, all on YouTube and Twitch. I never knew their schedule. It's like, when are they on? You know, it's like they didn't have a really concrete schedule. Like, I went to look. I'm like, oh, when's Attack of the Show on? Oh, Fridays. Well, how long are they on for? 4 hours. I'm like, what? Why don't they do what they used to do, the daily one-hour show? Or, you know what I mean? Or, you know, they used to do a daily one-hour show from 7 to 8. No, we're going to do one show like 4 hours a day, 4 hours on Friday. What? Or whatever it was. I'm like, holy crap. Or whatever it was. It was a long-ass show on Friday nights. Or something like that. I'm like, no, just... And they did all their skits. They recorded them a week. And they did this. And anyway, it was just. And you had to have a subscription to watch it. And it was just. You know, I think they went about the return all wrong.
Oh, it started.
And then there were so many things wrong after that that led to their downfall. So. And then it turns out they had a corporate sponsor. And I'm like, you couldn't get a TV, they couldn't get a TV network. Yeah, I don't get that because, like, the TV channel that took over theirs didn't even last like 4 months or 3 months. And I'm like, yes, G4 TV was taken over. Esquire TV took over their channel. It didn't even last 3 months, maybe 4 months.
Yeah, and Esquire turned in, I forget what it turned into.
I forget. And it was just... there was a niche. But here's the thing. Attack of the Show was great because it was silly. And they had a fan base.
And they explored, new equipment, movies, new TVs. Just kept it up.
Comic books. And explored. And X-Play explored video games. And they did...
Yeah.
Comedy skits, but then they were taken over by new owners and they wanted X-Play to be a serious news show, about video games. And it was like, what? Why? You know, I got to quote the Joker. Why so serious? That's not what the station was built on. You know, that's not what it was about. And it just got to the point they were trying to get rid of shows that like, they had Sasuke, which was the original Ninja Warrior Challenge from Japan. And they got rid of that show. I was like, why?
No, they kept that all the way to the very end. They kept that one.
Oh, they did keep that. They did keep that, but they didn't show it as much as they used to.
No.
They only showed the new one. They didn't show reruns. They only showed the new ones. They didn't.
I missed Dr. Octopus.
Like,
I mean, I missed Mr. Octopus.
The Octopus Man. I missed him. Like if you watch the early ones, it was like, and like the difference between the American one and the Japanese one, anybody in Japan can try out, okay? And they showed the tryouts. It was like,
well, the first
American
run,
Idol.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like American Idol, where they show the auditions.
Mm-hmm.
And usually got the same people trying out year after year. And it was hilarious. They had a guy who was like the Japanese Clark Kent, where he had a tearaway suit and he would wear a Superman costume. Well, a couple of times the suit wouldn't tear away and it was stuck around his ankles. Trying to watch, you've seen that one. Trying to watch him run the obstacle course with pants around his ankles, he would fall flat in his face on the first two steps into the water. But in the States, it's like, oh, we want the top athletes to try. It's like, come on. You know, I can't even watch it.
Again, it's like I said, Mr. Octopus. Some of the comedians that were on. You know,
oh, yeah. Like, they didn't take themselves seriously.
You knew they were not
going to
make it, but you were hoping.
Right. But what's funny is Mr. Octopus, he's like an 80-year-old man. He made it through three obstacles the one time. He made it further than people like a third of his age. It was like, well, what's your excuse? But what's funny is one of the American finalists, she's a wrestler on NXT now.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, she's one half of the women's tag team champions. So there you go.
But that's the original version.
That's the original.
The YouTube G4TV and Attack of the Show. Well, if you remember March or February, I think it was around March, the ever famous Frostgurin rant.
I didn't see it. I remember reading about it, and it was just
where she's complaining that, you know, that she wasn't as bangable as Olivia Munn and Morgan Webb. They were not there for your eye candy. If you all gamers are sexist. If you don't like it, don't watch it. Well,
okay.
Yeah, that was the response.
She could have went about it differently. Like, hey, Olivia Munn, I hate to say this. She should have went about it like this. She should have got the link for the original Olivia Munn interview that they don't talk about anymore. And countered with that. And that would have shut a lot of people up. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I explain the...
For those people who don't know, it's basically Olivia Munn had no idea what the bleep she was talking about. And where it was basically the guy was begging for somebody else to interview her. He thought it was a joke. He thought it was a prank. And he said, can I have Morgan Webb interview me? Kevin Pereira had to run in and save the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like 15 seconds after that, they had to go to commercial. The funny thing is, I watched that interview live, and I'm like, I felt so bad for the guy being interviewed, because here it is. It's his video game he's trying to promote, and you can see he's practically in tears, like, what? Are you serious? I was like, oh, my God, she should not be interviewing. And I think at that point on, she just sat with Kevin on the stage and let Morgan and Blair Herter and Blair, I can't remember the other one. They hired other interviewers from that point
on. Yeah. But, and then they doubled down to the point where Adam Sessler, who before that, if you said Adam Sessler, you were going, Almighty Sessler, Almighty Sessler.
Yeah.
No, he went off on the same tangent and adding, if you're Republican, you drink piss and whatnot. And he wished his family members who voted Republican to die. I'm going like, this is not what gamers want to hear. Gamers don't want to hear politics. Gamers want to hear about games.
Like, this is what happens when you take G4 TV off of network TV and have sensors.
So then, as
Adam
viewership sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, Adam Sessler can say whatever the hell he wants to say on his own YouTube channel. But this is a G4 TV channel where he has other people to consider.
And they kept backing,
which he did not.
Yeah, and they kept backing Frost, and well, viewership kept going down. Subscribers said, "Saying, see you later." There's not to mention, and it's been pointed out on several YouTube channels that there are several YouTube channels to cover new games. Whether it's, hey,
yeah,
I like this game to a full playthrough.
Mm-hmm.
They play the game for you. You can literally watch it like a movie.
Yeah.
And they're getting paid for it.
There's IGN.com that does this every day. There are plenty of other ones. But I watch G4 TV not for the video gameplay. There was other news going on. But unfortunately, I think G4 TV decided to focus on the video game aspect from what I heard.
Well, what else kept on going? Like I said, as lower viewership, lower subscribers happened, then
right,
they started laying off people. The final nail in the coffin, a lot of people believe, because at that first one, we're all,
right,
you know, like 30 people got fired. People thought Frost was going to get fired. No, she did not. I was like, okay.
I don't understand why not.
But she went to her Twitter and, quote, yo, let's play some games. There's a picture with the lizard smoking the cigar with the, you know, the cool glasses. I survived. In other words, after 30 people just got laid off, she decided to brag that she survived. 1 week later, she got fired.
Mm-hmm.
But it was too little, too late. They couldn't keep up with the money. They tried to make things budgeted. And as of Sunday, but it ended Monday, Sunday, everyone else found out they lost their jobs.
Well, you know what? It does say it shut down just a year after its relaunch. Because
mm-hmm,
it was October last year. And actually, this is, I have the letter here.
Okay.
If you want me to read the letter, this is the letter everybody got.
Go ahead.
Team, it says, team, as you know, G4 was reintroduced last year to tap into the popularity of gaming. We invested to create the new G4 as an online and TV destination for fans to be entertained, to be inspired, and connect with gaming content. Over the past several months, we worked hard to generate the interest in G4. but viewership is low and the network has not achieved sustainable financial results. This is certainly not what we hoped for. As a result, we have made the very difficult decision to discontinue G4's operations effective immediately. I know this is disappointing news, and I'm disappointed too. I want to thank you and everyone on the G4 team for the hard work and commitment to the network. Our human resources team is reaching out to you to provide you with support, discuss other opportunities that may be available, and answer any questions you may have. Thank you again for all your hard work for G4. Sincerely, Dave Scott, Chairman and CEO, Comcast Spectator. And as courtesy of Deadline.
Yeah. So like
it was a gamer-focused network. It wasn't like it was before.
Yeah, just basically, you know, low viewership, low subscribers, couldn't keep up the upkeep. That was the killer. But the one thing you probably won't see in most of any articles like that is what started it.
Actually, the departure of the summer of Russell Ahrens, who's an experienced digital media exec who would come aboard as G4's president in 2021, was a precursor to today's news, they said. That was one of the main things.
Well, there's a whole lot of people on YouTube that would cry bovine defecation on that. They, you know, because people were able to see that they were losing YouTube subscribers and watchers and listeners. The numbers went down, 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 down.
Ever since
that day. There's just no getting around that one.
Well, there were plans for other shows on the network that never... As it was announced, a programming slate included a revived version of original G4 mainstays, Attack of the Show, let's see, X-Play, comedy,
yep.
Boosted, Japanese competition series Ninja Warrior, esports competitions, and a Dungeons & Dragons limited series. I never heard of half these things on the network.
Yep.
And they said that along with putting content on YouTube and social media, G4 has a multi-year agreement with Twitch and PTV distribution deals with Verizon, Fios, Cox, Xfinity TV, and Philo. Oh, Facebook shutting down its gaming app and Google winding down gaming service Stadia, then startup billed as the MTV video games, also just went bust. So.
Mm-hmm. You know, but many times when something like this happens, you know, it was very obvious that what caused it. I mean, I can go back to like a game show, Press Your Luck, and one guy figured out the pattern of the pegboard. Well, that killed it.
Yeah,
he did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just one example. Roseanne turned into the Connors because of Roseanne's harsh comment. Yep.
Yep.
And well,
I'm surprised it lasted more than one season, but it did. Is it still on? I don't know.
I couldn't tell you. The fact is, you know, some you'll hear about, some you won't. But, if you were paying attention to what happened to G4, you know what happened.
Yeah. I think we covered the Frost thing
mm-hmm.
a while back when it happened. And Kevin Pereira left because of the Frost thing, because he stood up for her.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why he did that. You know, it's like, all right. You know, I know you're standing by people, but come on, you know.
You know, if you're seeing the bleeding.
Good Lord.
There's just no other way to get around it.
I'm surprised you couldn't get Olivia Munn to come back once in a while, but.
Well, no. After she has a few, you know, paychecks from some movies that produced.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
According to Silver Egret, yep. Apparently the counters are still on.
Wow. No, good for them because, you know, it shows that they could do a show without Roseanne. We decided to watch the episode after that to see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They killed her off. She OD'd on pain meds.
Mm-hmm.
I was laughing. I was like, oh, they killed her off. Holy shit. I thought it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Connors, not O'Connor. I don't know why I thought it was funny. It was just... It was the show she started because I remember I was watching the original run with my mom. I just want to see because everybody says the last season of Roseanne, the original run, was silly and it was the network's decision. And the last episode, the ending of it, she said it was all make-believe. And if you remember, Dan died of a heart attack the season before. He had a heart attack the season before.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived. And she goes, no, he died. And this and that, and, like, some weird thing, like, the boyfriends were switched, and she did that. She said that was my way of ending it the way she wanted to. Well, now the network got their revenge, saying, oh, well, because you did this, we're going to end your run on the show our way. I just thought it was kind of funny, so.
Yeah. Katie Sagal is John Goodman's new girlfriend there.
Really?
According to Silver Egret.
Well, good for him.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I just want
the Remarried with Children cartoon comes back.
Wait, there's a Married with Children cartoon?
Yeah, it's coming, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
A cartoon, though? Is Seth MacFarlane doing it?
That I couldn't tell you.
No, I just think it's funny. It's just like, you know what? It's just that I know American Dad's still going on TBS, but it's just the wrong time slot for me. It's on Mondays.
Mm.
So I haven't watched it since. I mean, it's cool it's still going. It's just I wish it wasn't on Monday nights. So.
Okay. And looks like Rain is off the radio, so check time by time to see if she makes a call.
I will. Yeah, I was checking her every once in a while. I'm surprised she went this long.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was good to hear that she was on.
Yes. If she does, I'll play. All right. Well, before she calls in, I have three stories from last week we didn't get to.
All right.
So let me get down. This is new. I guess it's from Sunday. So I guess this is from Comic-Con. I don't know. Anything from last weekend. Yeah, actually it is because... Yeah, this one is particular. It's about the Titans season 4. So, Mother Mayhem strikes in HBO Max's Titans season 4 preview scene. So there's less than a month, even closer now, before Titans returns to HBO Max for its fourth season. And fans at New York Comic Con were the first to see two new preview scenes from the upcoming episodes. Both scenes revolved around the team's trek back to San Francisco. If you remember, being waylaid by villains. If you remember season 3, they were in Gotham City. In the first clip, Franka Potenta makes her debut as Mother Mayhem, and she absolutely wipes the floor with the team. Nightwing, played by Brenton Thwaites, and Starfire, played by Anna Diop, really ought to be ashamed of themselves. Shame, 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 shame. They've had the Titans together for a few years now, and they still can't fight as a team. Instead, they attack Mother Mayhem one at a time, as you can see in the first clip. This proves to be a disastrous strategy. Every power that they throw at her is used against them in turn. The second preview scene features a glimpse of Titus Welliver's Lex Luthor as he makes a very dramatic invitation to his quote-unquote son, Connor slash Superboy, Playboy Joshua Orphan. I could talk tonight. Orphan. There's also a bit where Raven, played by Tegan Croft, and Beast Boy, Ryan Potter, imply that Tim Drake, Jay Lycurgo, is either gay or bisexual because of the way he refers to Star Labs as Bernard, who also happens to be his boyfriend in the comics. Finally, oh, there's a teaser video that offers only a slight glimpse at this year's Big Bad, played by Joseph Morgan. I swear I could talk tonight. Are you ready? Want to take a guess who the Big Bad is?
I'm going to say Brother Blood.
Give that man a cigar. Brother Blood's the Big Bad this year. Will we get that storyline? You know the one I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. I'm just going.
Oh, two new episodes of Titans will kick off season 4 on Thursday, November 3rd. That's right before myextralife.org.
Shout out to Judas Contract is Terra and Deathstroke.
Right. So what's the Brother Blood storyline I'm thinking of?
Oh, I could see the covers.
I was thinking the Lazarus something or other. No, that's Batman. Brother Blood had some big storyline with him. They were hooked up to a machine. The Titans were all hooked up to a machine, right?
Yep, it was the one that led that brought in Jericho and changed Robin to Nightwing.
Right, but he's already Nightwing, so.
So they could bring in Jericho.
To Robin. Right, he could bring in Jericho. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. This is okay. So, hold on. So two new episodes of Titans will kick off season 4 on Thursday, November 3rd. New episodes will continue through December 1st. The remaining 6 episodes of Titan season 4 are being held back for 2023. So we're going to get a month of episodes, and then we have to wait until 2023.
Oh, they got to cover Balls, Christmas
I
specials.
Say. I know. What Christmas specials?
Well, you said there's Balls. A month coming.
Oh, we got a month of episodes.
Yeah.
So what, we're going to get 5 episodes? Balls. So maybe 6 episodes? I don't know. Balls, I say. Balls. All right. One okay, hold on. Let me check to see if she's here. No, not yet. And I'm not checking the okay. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes begins production in Australia. Fans of the 20th Century Studios rebooted Planet of the Apes franchise are now one step closer to revisiting Caesar's World. Deadline brings word that the series' next installment, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, has officially started filming. Production is currently underway at Walt Disney Studios Australia, formerly Fox Studios Australia, Sydney, New South Wales. The last few weeks have given us several bits of news regarding the sequel, which will be the first Apes entry to hit theaters following the Disney-Fox merger of 2019. The studio revealed the film's official title last month, along with the announcement that Freya Allen of The Witcher had booked a role as one of the lead humans. Since then, the call sheet has expanded to include Peter Macon, Eka Darvill, and Kevin Durant. Owen Teague previously joined the cast over the summer as the new lead ape, replacing Andy Serkis' Xerxes Caesar, who perished at the end of War for the Planet of the Apes in 2017. Sorry if they're spoilers. You've had 5 years to see the movie. Durand is rumored to be playing an ape villain in the movie. 20th Century also released new concept art for Kingdom last month featuring an ape riding a horse. But aside from the film taking place, quote-unquote, many years after War for the Planet of the Apes, plot details are still under wraps. Wes Ball is directing the movie from a screenplay by Rick Jaffa, Amanda Silver, Josh Friedman, and Patrick Asim. Under the terms of its deal with the Australian government, Kingdom is receiving $17 million in Australian currency, or about $10 million in U.S. dollars, as a token of support. Screen NSW will provide additional financing through its quote-unquote Made in NSW fund. While announcing the start of filming at a press conference, Australian Arts Minister Tony Burke claimed that the production will create more than 400 local jobs. It will also reportedly inject, good Lord, it will also reportedly inject $128 million Australian dollars or $18 million U.S. dollars into the Australian economy. It will be filmed here. And that says a wonderful thing about jobs and creativity in Australia, said Burke. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes will hit theaters sometime in 2024. Ah, one more story. I don't know if it's near Comic-Con, but it came out last a week ago. News about The Boys Season 4, and I can't wait for this one. The Boys Season 4 images reveal Firecracker and Sister Sage. Season 4 of The Boys has been filming for less than 2 months. However, Amazon is already peeling back the curtain on two new soups joining the cast next year. And I don't mean tomato and chicken noodle. I added that one in myself. As production continues in Toronto, Amazon Prime, via Variety, has given us our first look at Valerie Curry and Susan Hayward as Firecracker and Sister Sage, respectively. You can check out photos of their characters below when I put them up later tonight. Costume designer Laura Jean Shannon, who was previously responsible for Jensen Ackles' Soldier Boy outfit in Season 3, also tackled the suits for both of these heroines. For Curry's Firecracker, Shannon chose a blue camel pattern that extends to the pistol strapped to her hip. The Vought logo also appears in several different places, while the red trim and silver gauntlets add some extra patriotic flavor to the ensemble. Plus, her belt buckle is emblazoned with a gun and a stick of dynamite, hinting at the explosive nature of her powers. Sister Sage, on the other hand, prefers a more muted color scheme than her fellow soup. Rather than a mask, Hayward's character dons a set of brown tinted sunglasses. Her torso also features an upside down Eye of Providence, suggesting that her abilities are rooted in mysticism. It also looks as if her entire costume is inlaid with her very own SS logo. Curry and Hayward are both joined The Boys Season 4 back in August. Unfortunately, Amazon neglected to share any additional info about their characters' backgrounds or power sets, and the fact that neither soup seems to have appeared in Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson's original comic book series made it difficult to speculate on the nature of their personalities. The producers insist that most of these details, quote-unquote, will be kept under wraps until the season airs. Regardless, these new images offer some clues about what we can expect once the new episodes finally arrive. Firecracker and Sister Sage aren't the only ones set to make a big splash when Season 4 hits Amazon Prime. Cameron Crovetti, Ryan Butcher, has also been promoted to series regular after recurring in Seasons 2 and 3. Additionally, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is joining the show in the mystery role. Amazon hasn't announced a release date for The Boys Season 4. There you go. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is all the updates from New York Comic Con.
There you go.
And I'm sure I do have some other updates coming up. Just checking to see if we have any other callers. And if anybody wants to call in, you can call in on our guest call-in line, 714-583-6908. Again, that number is 714-583-6908.
There you go. Nothing from Ship of Heroes again.
Yeah, I have no updates from...
We were rolling on a good drinking game, let me tell you.
I know.
Especially those hyphens.
Hold on, Silver Eagle, was Brother Blood involved with the resurrecting Trigon? I think that's what it was. Because I know he had all the Titans hooked up to the machine. It was something, I can't remember. It was either giving him immortality or I think it was something with Trigon. Or I'm going to go to Wikipedia right now and look it up. Because that storyline was like in the 80s and I'm drawing a blank right now. And
the Church of Blood is rising, yep.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Okay, hold on. I'm trying to read here. Brother Blood brainwashed Nightwing and attempted to control Raven's power. She defeated him, and his mind was seemingly destroyed. Brother Blood's wife, Mother Mayhem. Ah, Brother Blood's wife is Mother Mayhem. Okay.
Right.
Okay. I forgot it. Okay.
Let's see. Like I said, the big news came, you know, basically was G4 this week, because after that, it was kind of quiet.
Yeah, that was the shot. Okay. Wow, this
literally
is not giving me any news.
Oh, wait a minute. No. I take that back. We did have a passing. Robert Coltrane passed away. If you're not familiar with the name, you will most likely know his most famous character, Hagrid.
Poor Harry Potter. Poor Harry Potter. Hagrid.
Yeah. He's been in a few other movies, just that you, well, like I said, when it comes to overall recognition, it was Hagrid.
Yeah.
Let's all remember, you know, that first image. He comes through the door, busting it down. Sorry about that. Picks up the doors.
Yep.
He was also in James Bond, correct? Yep.
So I'm trying to find what the big storyline with... Brother Blood was.
This is going to bother you all night.
It is. I know there was a big friggin' storyline with him.
All right, so we're going to need someone to be Norbert, the dragon from the first one.
That's right.
Why didn't they bring back Norbert, at least in one of the sequels? They actually had toys of Norbert. I remember that.
I don't know.
And Mordecai says there was another big news that came out earlier today.
What was that?
Vortica says there was another one that came out today.
What, a death? Or?
Or I don't know about a death, but he just said it was something.
What came out today? What came out today?
As we patiently wait. Oh, yeah, Harrison Ford.
Oh, I have that story. Hold on.
Yep.
All right. All right, I'll read that now. Okay. All right, forget Brother Blood. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's official.
And you're AFK.
Harrison Ford. Hold on. Harrison Ford officially joins the MCU as the new Thunderbolt Ross. Yes, there was speculation for months. So last month, YouTuber Jeff Snyder whipped Marvel fans into a frenzy when he claimed that Marvel had approached Harrison Ford about replacing the late William Hurt as Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross in future MCU projects. These rumors picked up some extra steam last week when Slash Film independently, quote-unquote independently, by the way, confirmed Ford's involvement. But now, all the major industry trades have made it official. The Hollywood Reporter brings word that Ford is indeed taking over Hurt's role, starting with Captain America, New World Order in 2024. He's also expected to appear as Ross in Thunderbolts, which should revive the Red Hulk rumors. Hurt made his first appearance as General Ross in The Incredible Hulk in 2008. After an eight-year absence from the MCU, he returned to the franchise in 2016's Captain America Civil War, which established that his character had become the U.S. Secretary of State. Hurt passed away earlier this year at the age of 71. He last showed up as Ross in Black Widow, which hit theaters last summer. Meanwhile, Ford is currently gearing up for his final appearance as the title character in the fifth Indiana Jones movie, which bows next year. Jones was in Anaheim for D23 Expo last month, but only promoted his appearance in Indiana Jones 5. It's likely that his Marvel deal wasn't closed at that time. Ford and Hurt never appeared on screen together, but in 1985, they were both nominated for Best Actor at the 58th Academy Awards. In the end, Hurt took home the Golden Statue for his role in Kiss of the Spider-Woman, beating Ford's performance in Witness. Julius Ona is directing New World Order from a screenplay by The Falcon and the Winter Soldier head writer Malcolm Spellman and Dallin Musson. The film will also mark the return of Tim Blake Nelson as Samuel Stern slash The Leader, who also debuted in The Incredible Hulk. Danny Ramirez and Carl Lumbly will also reprise their respective roles as Joaquin Torres and Isaiah Bradley from The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Captain America New World Order will hit theaters on May 3rd, 2024. And there you go. That's your Harrison Ford news. Welcome to the MCU. So once he does that, then we have to start the things with Han Solo meeting Indiana Jones, meeting Thunderbolt Ross.
For some reason, I could see this here. Like, who wrote the script? What's going on here? I got a bad feeling about this.
About this.
Never tell me
that,
the odds.
If he says any of those lines,
I was like, I can understand those two getting away, but don't tell me about Scruffy Nerf Herder.
Yeah, I don't think he'd say that one. I could see the other one. I could see him saying the first two. I can't see him saying the Scruffy Nerf Herder. Okay, so I got to talk about this really quick. Earlier today, I texted Mad Viking. I said, or yesterday, I think, I'm in a quandary about tonight's show. Because, after the game last night. So the Yankees managed to tie the series up. Tonight's supposed to be game five. I say supposed to be. And I was like, I'm going to have to do the show, and the game's going to be on the background. Well, as, I don't know, fate, whatever, they're in a massive rain delay right now, and I don't know what the hell's going on. They're going to try and get this game in tonight. I don't know what time it's supposed to start. It was supposed to start at 7:07. And it's 8:50 now, and they still haven't started, and they keep going to the stadium, showing rain and people sitting with, like, plastic ponchos and umbrellas. And I'm like, at some point, they're just going to say, we're going to play tomorrow. But they haven't switched. They're still sitting there. I'm like, really? We're going to get this game in tonight? Because here's the deal. Wednesday, the winner of this game is going to Houston for game one of the American League Championship Series. So I'm thinking, and this is what I told my physical therapist yesterday, God forbid, this morning, God forbid it gets rained out, they got to play this game at 107 to give time for the team to get there. Because I can't see them playing this game tomorrow night at 7:07, goes to extra innings, winning team, okay, celebrate. 5 minutes later, okay, we're going because we got to get to Houston. So, and who is this Kevin Darkhart dude? He looks like Casey Jones, Champions Online. He's all sparkly glowy.
Brown.
I don't know. Anyway, let's do roll call. Here we are in the WCOC studios. It's Silver Egret, Alan and the Teddy Sins, Mr. Nom Nom and Clarence, Mordecai, Mad Viking, yes, and I look like a wascally wabbit from the Blood Moon. The Blood Moon. And Blood also Moon. Co, the Blood Moon. Yes, I'm also mascot for Bunny Nights, along with Bun Bun, apparently. I'm a white wabbit. Oh, Q Jefferson Airplane. I just thought of that.
Okay.
Hold on. Silver Regret says, just a few months ago, it was rumored Ed Norton would be a different version of Red Hulk. No, I think with the multiverse storyline, he should be Bruce Banner from another multiverse. Because in 2008, he played Bruce Banner.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Red Hulk. He should just play Hulk. But apparently, he does not play nice with others. That's why he was not picked to be in the Avengers. Or they cast Mark Ruffalo. That's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still have a hard time of Death to Smoochie.
Wait, Mordecai has a great line about that Harrison Ford. That's a bit of a silly decision, if you ask me. Ford is in his 80s. He belongs in a museum. Oh, very, very clever callback line to Raiders of the Lost Ark. Okay, and here hanging out, it's just me and Mad Viking on the steps of City Hall on the Excelsior server on Atlas Park with this guy, Kevin Darkhart. I don't even know how.
He's there.
What description? How far can a man be pushed before he has reached his limits? Push him and find out. I am Kevin. Oh, Kevin. Wait, this is funny. His name is Kevin Darkhart, and in his description, okay. How far? Okay, remember, his name is Kevin Darkhart, right? Here's his description. How far can a man be pushed before he has reached his limits? Push him and find out. I am Kevin Harkhart.
Drank.
Dude. You spell your last name wrong in your description.
Wouldn't be the first, I will say that.
But, dude, read your description. I don't know if he's listening, but... That's fine. I hope he's not, because that's fucking hilarious. That is fucking hilarious. You know what would have been funnier? If you spelled the heart with an S. So you're a dark fart. All right. Let me check, see if anybody called in. No, no. Well, we had a rain sighting earlier, but nothing.
Hey, I'm glad she's back. Everyone knows that.
Yes, the drought is over. Rain has been sighted. We have seen her. We have heard her.
Let's see. Oh, we're getting too close to that time.
I know.
Send them down. Send them down.
Yes. Okay. So I looked this up on Google. So in the comics, Brother Blood was the leader of a cult dedicated to worshiping Trigon, rather than the headmaster of a villain's academy. According to the producer, Teen Titans, Tio Slack, Brother Blood's character was written... Hold on a minute. Looks like a TV show. I guess this is what you have to know about ahead of time. Okay. Let me just read this first.
All right, you're reading.
Okay, Brother Blood is the leader of the Church of Blood. Okay, created by comic book writer Marv Wolfman and illustrator George Perez, Brother Blood made his DC Comics debut in the 21st issue of New Teen Titans in the summer of 1982. Yes, the fact that his name sounds like a demented clergyman is no coincidence. The bearer of the title is recognized as the High Priest of the Church of Blood, which is a cult that worships the aforementioned Trigon. Okay, served the main antagonist for much of the second season of Titans. Okay, 2018, yes. According to DC lore, the Church of Blood has existed for centuries and was somehow able to maintain a deceptive reputation of being a well-meaning and non-violent international cult. They may have gotten away with it. It wasn't for those meddling kids. No, if we're not for those meddling... Yeah! Oh, my God, I just made it up, and that's what it says. They might have gotten away with it if we're not for those meddling kids and the Teen Titans exposing them for their reign of evil. As a result, Brother Blood would become one of the most dangerous recurring enemies of the team, including when the title was succeeded by another. Okay, two DC comic characters own the Brother Blood moniker, a father and son. As you might have been able to guess, Brother Blood is a name that has been passed down from generation to generation for as long as the Church of Blood has existed. However, only two characters have held the moniker in DC Comics' main continuity, the first being Sebastian Blood VIII, who is actually the cult's eighth high priest overall. His son, Sebastian Blood IX, became his successor when he was a teenager by the only means possible, thanks to a 700-year-old curse, patricide, which means to kill one's own father. An interesting fact about Blood IX is that he also happens to be the, not legally recognized, husband of Titans member Raven, who is also the biological daughter of Trigon. As of now, there's no confirmation of which iteration of Brother Blood former The Vampire Diaries cast member Joseph Morgan is set to play on Titan Season 4. However, if it is Sebastian Blood IX, that will certainly make things a lot more awkward. Okay, Brother Blood is... Come on. All right, this is just telling me shit about the character. What storyline in a comic book? When Joseph Morgan joins us in cast season 4, it'll make... Come on. Okay, in Teen Titans and Judas Contract movie, in which Brother Blood serves as the main antagonist... but is seen leading an evil organization called Hive instead of the Church of Blood. Just tell me in the comic books.
Well, remember, also with the original Teen Titans cartoon, he went from being the Church to the leader of the Hive.
Right. Okay, I'm going to... Okay, now it shows your Brother Blood.
Sounds like you're this drinking really, a lot.
No, I'm not. It's just I went to Comic Vine. It had a link for Comic Brother Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. Brother Blood appears in 177 issues. Brother Blood is the eighth Brother Blood. Each person in the lineage must kill the previous to take the mantle of blood. He has ways he can be reincarnated after death. I really don't give a shit about that.
Now, Countess Copula, yes, he was not in the Timverse DC Animated. They kept the Titans separated from that. I gotta type it. I don't know if listening or not.
I don't know.
Because if you remember, all through the Timverse, you never saw...
I'll have to look at this next week. Yes, go ahead.
It's like you never saw Beast Boy, you never saw Starfire, you never saw Cyborg, you never saw Raven. Kid Flash,
right,
had every chance. Wonder Girl, didn't see her. Speedy, no, I take that back. Speedy wasn't really a full part of the bunch, but he,
right.
Speedy was in the DCAU, Red Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they kept the Teen Titans cartoon and the Timverse separate.
Yes. Quite right. Okay. The intern bots have gone to the tomb to give me the tome. I said it right.
Yes.
Now, as we've said, we've covered the modern age and all the silver age. So we just have the wonderful golden age. And these are the, I got to say, these are the best entries. And what I'm referring to is, these are not the X-Men or the Avengers. These are not the JSA or the JLA or any other top-notch team you could think of. No, not the Bat Family or the Superman Family. Or any other top-notch superhero family. No. These are half-baked heroes from comic book history. And it's appropriate we're going to the Golden Age now. And we're staying there until we're done with this book. For I give you entries from the League of Regrettable Superheroes. All right. Our first entry tonight. This one was created by Max Gaines, Gardner Fox, and Sheldon Moldoff. Debuted in The Happy Houlihans, number one of EC Comics, 1947. Current phase, eclipsed. The quote, "You have no right to command me in anything." I refer to Moon Girl in comics. Female superheroes have always been fewer in number than their male counterparts, but not so few that the creators of superheroines wouldn't copy an already proven formula. Moon Girl was the sole costume hero published by EC Comics, the company that would become notorious for the gory horror comics targeted in Frederick Wareham's exoriating book, Seduction of the Innocent, founded by Max Gaines after his departure from All-American Publications, home of Green Lantern, Flash, and most relevant to Moon Girl, Wonder Woman. Educational Comics was intended to be a comics publisher that eschewed superheroes in favor of religious and didactic stories. But after Gaines' untimely death in 1947, his son William picked up the reins, steering EC toward the horror, war, and humor comics that became its mainstays. Along the way, the company tried its hand at superheroes. Moon Girl's story featured a fairly familiar origin. Claire Loon is princess of an isolated civilization of warrior women in possession of powers that make her superior to any man. Claire takes off for America, where, assuming the identity of Moon Girl, she battles evil in her telepathically controlled airship, or, to be more precise, Moonship. Her natural superiority is enhanced by a mystic moonstone she wears on a choker. Similarities to Wonder Woman aside, Moon Girl melded adventure with a touch of romance. Part of her mission in America was to locate her former suitor, the rugged Prince Mengu. Finding the dusky hunk teaching school, she adopts a civilian identity in the same institution, pairing up with, quote-unquote, the prince, to fight a parade of primarily female menaces, from the horn-headed Satana to the invaders from Venus, which apparently, just as the famous self-help book suggested, is where women come from. Moon Girl had a troubled publishing history. Her comic debuted in the late 1940s when the shine was already dulling on the superhero craze and was produced by a publisher for whom costumed adventurers held little interest. When the original title Moon Girl and the Prince began to flag in sales, the book was rebranded as simply Moon Girl, then the more descriptive Moon Girl Fights Crime, then dropping the superheroic trappings altogether. It was repackaged as a primarily a romance comic under the masthead, A Moon, A Girl, Romance. The last iteration saw a 5-issue run, in which Moon Girl eked out only a single appearance.
Now, is this any relation to the Moon Girl of now? That's the question.
No, I was thinking that. Moon Girl and Dinosaur, I was thinking that. No, not even close. Remember back in the Golden Age, most of the names are public domain.
Mm-hmm.
I think because they didn't have copyrights back then, so I'm pretty sure you could use I think as long as the costumes are different, you could pretty much use any of the Golden Age character names nowadays. Like this one, for example, this one was created by Stephen A. Douglas. And it was debuted in regular Fellas Heroic Comics number 12. The Eastern Color Printing, 1942. His primary weapon, the Pipes of Death. His quote, "What is a strange melody I feel running through my body? And I want to see one of the Metal Thursday DJs make a character like this. His name, Music Master." See, public domain. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mordicus. Music Master. Go ahead. I dare you. I dare you. Okay.
I know the name is the Music Meister, but that was the first thing that came to my mind when I heard that from the Brave and the Bold.
Oh, that's right. The Music Meister. See? See? It's Music Master. Music Master. Okay. Musician John Wallace was gainfully employed as a music teacher and symphony performer when Destiny, gave the violinist the means to strike a blow against crime, flung into a series of amazing adventures by his impetuous nature and intense hatred of injustice. So begins a caption at the beginning of his debut adventure. John Wallace finds himself the possessor of the wonderful Pipes of Death and becomes the Music Master. It's a concise summary that skips some of the finer points. Leaving the symphony one evening, Wallace rescues an elderly street fiddler from a well-dressed assailant, discovering the old man is Antonini, the famous violin maker. Wallace is called on again to defend the artisan, this time from kidnappers, one of whom inadvertently stabs Wallace to the chest with a violin bow. I didn't think that was possible. Dragged back to Antonini's shop, the wounded rescuer is revived by the so-called Pipes of Death. Though they look like ordinary panpipes, the secret of this ancient Egyptian instrument, explains Antonini, is a song which creates sound waves that match exactly the life vibrations of the human body. The science is a little shaky, but a once again healthy Wallace can't argue with the results. Antonini isn't so lucky. while looking to steal the famous artisan secret varnish formula, the same one Antonio Stradivari used on his famous violins, crooks kill Wallace's wizened benefactor. Hungry for justice, Wallace dons the dead man's frock coat, arms himself with the pipes of death, and launches into action as the Music Master. More than merely reviving the Music Master from near death, the pipes also grant the hero strange musical and magical powers. The gifted Wallace can now disappear and reappear in a flurry of musical notes, fly through the air along the path of any musical sound, and even use music as a force field, a weapon, or a bind to tie his enemies. On several occasions, he is even capable of ordering musical notes to do his bidding, sending them wandering off like sentient soldiers. With the pipes of death at his side, the Music Master promptly apprehends Antonini's murderers, continuing on to fight crooks, Axis agents, and assorted bad guys for more than a dozen adventures. The Music Master even picks up a sidekick, Downbeat, a hep-talking rich kid, bleats out, "Ol' Reet and Daddy-O," at the drop of a hat. As a truly unusual comic book hero, Music Master reached a coda in 1945, one from which not even the pipes of death could revive him. Okay. And we have one more.
Yep.
So somehow, I usually have three bookmarks, and somehow, I don't know how, I lost the other one. Oh, I found it. Wait. Wait a minute. Okay, here we go. Okay. And our third entry for the night. Okay, this one was created by Adrian Dingle. That's his name. This one debuted in Triumph Adventure Comics number 1. Hillsborough Studio, August 1941. Favorite bacon, Canadian. And the quote, "In the name of Koliak, destroy the Etheria." And this one, we speak of Nelvana of the Northern Lights. Comic book series. I could talk. Take two. Comic book superheroes, by and large, began as a uniquely American phenomenon. But it didn't take long for other countries to come up with Cape Crusaders and dynamic do-gooders all their own. When wartime supply embargo shut down the shipping of American comic books across the U.S.-Canadian border, Canuck publishers came through with heroes of their own invention and with local flair. Nelvana wasn't the first superhero to hail from the Great White North. She was preceded by a pair of Super Canucks. The original Iron Man, no relation to Bozo, that we read about previously, or Marvel's armored hero, and the seemingly unpowered Freelance. Other Canadian superheroes from the Golden Age of comics include Captain Wonder, Speed Savage, Commander Steel, Sergeant Canuck, and Mr. Monster. Hold on. I know there's a Captain Canuck.
Yep.
I guess he got a promotion after a while. Yep. But Nelvana was the country's first female superhero, and she even preceded Wonder Woman by several months. Decked out in a winged headdress and fur-trimmed costume, Nelvana cut an unmistakable figure, dashing through the Arctic air and often framed by the aurora borealis. Peculiar to this first class of Canadian superheroes, Nelvana was distinctly tied to the culture and mythology of the land she protected, the demigoddess daughter of Koliak and the embodiment of the Northern Lights. Nelvana, along with her brother Tenero, is charged with protecting the Inuit people, whom Nelvana calls Eskimos in the parlance of the time, from any and all assorted evils. Among the abilities shared by Nelvana and her brother are the powers of flight, at light speed even, invisibility, telepathy, and weather control. Tenero has his sister beat on one front. He often accompanies her in the form... Oh, God. In the form an enormous, massive-like dog. He exists under a curse to prohibit him from being seen in his human form by quote-unquote white men. That's not racist. Nirvana suffers no such indignity. Nirvana has her real-world origins in mythology. Creator Adrian Dingell was inspired by the stories of Native Inuit myths told to him by his far-traveling friend, Franz Johnson. The result was a popular character whose adventures took her from battling the armies of hidden kingdoms to smashing the axes to a stint as a secret agent, and finally as Earth's defender against an alien armada. Aside from having to take her brother out for a walk, Nirvana's most regrettable aspect is that she remains largely unknown south of the border. But perhaps her time has come. A small but dedicated legion of fans in her native country are now encouraging the character's revival. And that's three entries. Should I do another one? Or...
Well, you got time.
All right, we'll do one more. Okay. So this next entry was created by Alan Mandel and Dan Barry. Debuted in Clue Comics number 1 by Hillman Periodicals, January 1943. The day job, wrestling. The quote, first you get sleepy, see? Then you get a nightmare. They are nightmare and sleepy. Good Lord. You might think that the life of an itinerant professional wrestler would be sufficiently exciting for any individual. Traveling from town to town, testing your strength and skill in the squared circle, competing for honors and prizes awarded only to the greatest in the sport. For career grappler Bob White and his teenage manager Terry Wake, however, wrestling is only the prologue to adventure. Because outside the ring, they are, in secret, the outlandish costume heroes, Nightmare and his kid sidekick, Sleepy, decked out in a garish skeleton costume, which was doused in phosphorescent paint so as to lend him additional creep factor. The burly Nightmare became a symbol of terror to an assembly of weird and often seemingly supernatural foes, such as the Undertaker, not the one we know, an alleged medieval spirit known as the Robber Baron, and most terrifying of them all, the corpse that seals living men's faces. Despite appearances, neither Nightmare nor his whimsical-adorned junior partner, Sleepy, decked out in what appears to be a footy pajamas and a red riding hood, boasted any supernatural or superhuman powers. In fact, the duo were all too human. Life on the road sometimes left them without money, food, or a place to sleep. Such problems Batman never had. Halfway through their abbreviated existence, Nightmare and Sleepy lightened the tone. The elder partner dropped his skeleton suit for a more traditional skin-tight spandex superhero uniform, complete with encircled N insignia on the chest and a pair of horns on his cowl. These were more than slightly reminiscent of the quote-unquote bat ears on another grim Avenger of the Night. Likewise, the light dose of mysticism that shrouded their earlier foes dissipated, leaving Nightmare and Sleepy slugging common thugs, mugs, and the occasional Nazi in lieu of corpse thieves and sundry spirits. By way of a truly unusual climax to his story, Nightmare's final and solo appearance strips the hero of his backstory and reimagines him as a crime-fighting genie summoned by the smoking of a homemade cigar hand-wrapped by a slap-happy would-be private detective, Nosy McGinnis. It's a weird conclusion, but with one last puff, Nightmare and Sleepy were no more.
Somewhere, Vince McMahon is going,
yes.
Damn! I missed a chance.
Huh, we only have 7 more to go.
7?
And then we're done with the Golden Age.
And what? The tome will be done.
And then we put this tome back in the tomb. And then we move on to our next tome. Yes, yes, yeah. Okay, just jeez. They're so grabby. Just relax. Take the tomb. Take the tomb, put it back in the tomb. And why do we have a tomb if we're in a satellite? Would you guys dig it up from the earth and move it up? You did. Oh, they did. Okay, they found it in the earth. They brought it up here for safekeeping. Couldn't you have just brought the book up here and put it in a vault? No. Oh, okay. They have a screen on that thing I'm reading because the tome from the vault isn't a tongue twister for you. Get out of here, you wise ass.
Put the tome in the tombstone.
No, it goes in. No. The tomb goes in the tome until we're done with the book. Then it goes back in. There's two more tomes in the tomb, and they won't give them to me until they only give me one at a time. Shoot. In case you missed it last week, next up we're going to do supervillains. Oh, right. I can't wait to get to that one. Then next is sidekicks. Holy mackerel. I mean, you think this does a hero. I mean, think about it. We've had some doozies of heroes, but, you know, you got to think that the villains, most of them are one-shots. I mean, some of these heroes were one-shots, but the villains, you know. I can't wait to see them. I mean, if you guys need, like, ideas for nemesis, wait till we get to them. I don't know.
Has someone been watching Mystery Men?
Nemesis. Yeah, that's where I got it from. Nemesis. Oh, Pogo Springer has joined us in CLA. Thank you. There she is. Nemesis. Yeah, it was on the other night. Like, the last 20 minutes of it was on. It was like, oh.
It's like
Nemesis, yes, I do that. I just cut right to the end. You see, I just had to say, you know what I was getting at. Nemesis.
when you look at the Jeffrey Rush in that
Jeffrey
costume,
Rush.
Right?
Yeah.
He would be perfect to look like Mephisto.
Yes. And that movie is, I got to tell you a story. Early 2000s, my mom was like in this DVD of the month club where she paid for one and they give her a freebie. 2 months in a row, ready for this one, her freebie, Mystery Men and the School Rock House videos. And she goes, Rich, this is a super, it's Bogo. She goes, I got this one. Do you want it? I think it's a superhero one. And it was Mystery Men. I'm like, oh, yes, I want that. I was like, this movie is so good. It's so underrated. I'm like, holy shit, I want that. Yes. She goes, really? I was like, it's such an underrated superhero movie. Because remember, this is years before the MCU. I think at that time it was like Blade, the Blade movies, and this one, Mystery Men. But it was such a good movie.
And Ghost Rider.
Yeah, the first one. The second one was eh. But Mystery Men was such a good movie. I think at that point I could quote that movie because there was nothing else out. It was like every time this movie was on, it was just like, oh, God. You know what's funny?
Are we going to be heroes or am I going to eat this egg salad?
Oh, what was the one I was watching? It's like, should we knock or should we just let ourselves in? He's even laughing when he says the line, too. Nemesis. When Morty says, is Sasha Cohen is rumored to be Mephisto?
Borat?
That's a nice. No, it can't be him because I'm going to picture him as Borat the whole time. Like, then again, when Michael Keaton was going to be Batman, I'm like, you remember, he was Beetlejuice right before. I was like, Beetlejuice is going to be Beetlejuice and Mr. Mom is Batman. He was a great Bruce Wayne, though.
Oh yeah.
I just didn't like the I just didn't like the cowl, because he had to turn his whole upper torso when he turned. And I think there's too much. The thing was, I know Jack Nicholson was Joker, but looking back on that movie, there was too much Joker in that movie. And it was like they had, think about that movie. It was like, it seemed like there were more, like, I know, it, like they had, I think they had equal scenes, but it just seemed like for a Batman movie, it should be like 70% Batman, 30% Joker.
Well, you're taking 60-40. Michael Keaton, who's known for comedy, pretty much telling him not to do comedy, and you're putting him up against...
But what I'm saying is, it seemed like there were equal amounts of Joker and Batman
in
that movie. And it seems like there should have been more Batman. You know what I mean? Like,
well, like I said, the feeling was, because you're taking Michael Keaton, at that time being known for his comedy, taking away the comedy,
right,
and you're putting him up against Jack Nicholson. Good luck.
Well, hold on. Go to City of Heroes. Look across the way under the Atlas statue right now really quickly. You just missed it.
What?
There were like 100 little snow beasts running around under the Atlas statue. I kid you not. I don't know how they did that. Is there a way to get snow beast minions? They don't know that?
I don't know.
Well, if you want to, all right, one, you're AFK. Two, go run over by Miss Liberty really quickly.
Yeah, there is still some Atlas lag. And if they got a whole bunch
of
mini, yes,
they're coming back.
Wait,
look over there now. You see them
all? I'm trying to turn it so I can see.
Okay. Wait, now I'm AFK.
And it ain't going to move.
You could just see them. You're staring right at them.
Yeah, but I did. I changed the screen, so I'm looking down. That turned off
it.
Atlas Park.
Okay, trust me. There are like a whole bunch of these snow beast minions.
I think I'm destined to be signed out.
It's like
a
winter horse. I don't know what the hell they're all doing. They're pets. It's like somebody has a winter horse. Shit, we have 90 seconds left.
Yep.
All right. Really quickly, I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. I hope you're enjoying the Blood Moon Week 1. As you can see, people can see on my back, I've already done the trickery event 5 times. I've got the cool backpack of candy. Don't touch my candy. Unless you ask me nicely, then you could have some. I'm also dressed as a bunny now. I've petitioned and been accepted. Me and Bun Bun are we are now co-mascots of Bunny Nights. Yes, I'm a white fluffy bunny for the Blood Moon. What do you expect? I jump around. Okay, so watch those superhero and cool TV shows in our genres. And movies. Don't forget, October 21st, Black Adam comes out. November 11th, Wakanda Forever, Black Panther 2 comes
out.
There
it goes. I went off.
Read those comic books and those novels. And we'll see you next week. Anything you want to say in closing really quickly?
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Quickly. Goodnight, Gracie. And stick around. The Greatest Generation podcast coming up next.
On DawnRadio.live.
On DawnRadio.live. Embrace the Dawn. Welcome back, Sovereign Reign. We missed you. The drought is over. And so, 10 seconds, and we're still waiting for news about the Yankee game tonight. I don't know if they're going to get it in tonight. It's 9:29, 9:30. Good night, Gravy. Jack was just being himself as Joker. Yeah, no, that's not my point. My point is the movie time he got in that movie. It was a Batman movie, and Joker got his equal time as Batman. That's what I'm saying. That's all. All right, guys. I'll see you during the week. Tune in to DawnRadio.live and Brazen Dawn all week. And have fun with the Blood Moon. Good night, all. All right, let's get you out of here. get you out tonight.
All right.
Thank you for co-hosting, and I'll get you to your duties. All right, signing off right now. 3, 2, 1, enjoy. Talk to you later.